It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling.
It is December 1st. We are 24 days away from Christmas when Santa Claus makes his yearly round. So something to keep in mind. Favorite time of the year for me. I really do. I love it. I brought a gift in to Heidi today. That is a Dave Elswick original baked by my own hands fruitcake for you and your family. So enjoy that. I think that you'll like it. Different than those fruitcakes you can get in the mail. You know, those come in and you go to unwrap them and they're so gooey and everything. That's not what that cake is. I promise. I didn't give you a doorstop. You know, that I didn't do. Usually that's about what true cakes are good for, is the door stop. I've got a friend that she buys about 3 of them a year to eat and puts it in the freezer early on, like in the middle of November, and then throws them away sometime in March. Never opens them. Anyway, I got one for her, too, to give to her so that she and her husband can enjoy. It's a great... Here's what I do my fruitcake. I cut a slice of it, and I have it for breakfast with a cup of coffee. And it's really good. It's that kind of a really dense cake. It's really good. It's my mother's recipe. I have shared it one time, that recipe, on my show. And if you were lucky enough to be listening to my show, you have it, because it was not shared in my mother's family. They didn't give it to anybody. That's an original recipe from Germany, just so you'll know. All right, so today is a huge day in Washington, D.C. We'll talk about what's happening today with Congressman French Hill. We'll talk with Bruce Westerman as well, Congressman, in District 4. Today, abortion is back on the docket at the Supreme Court. This is the biggest argument that is going to be in front of the Supreme Court for a long, long time. There's a lot of people who believe that Roe v. Wade may actually be overturned because of what's going on. I mean, the scope of abortion in the U.S. Is really at stake now. And there's already been a lot of pullback on abortion here in the United States over the last decade, maybe as much as 15 years. There's been, things that have happened, like heartbeat bills, pain bills, all kinds of bills that have been heard and codified and made into law across the United States. Well, they'll be hearing oral arguments today at the Supreme Court. A lot of eyes going to be turned that way towards Washington, D.C., in the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health case that's coming up. Potentially the most consequential challenge to 1973 Roe v. Wade landmark ruling that limited government restrictions on abortion. Let's go over the key details about the case and what you can expect. The state of Mississippi will be arguing that the Supreme Court should allow it and other states to ban abortion after 15 weeks. More specifically, it's asking the court to strike down a lower court's decision blocking its 15-week abortion ban from taking effect. Passed in 2018, Mississippi's law encountered a legal challenge from Jackson Women's Health Organization, an abortion clinic that claims Mississippi law is unconstitutional and should be permanently blocked because it violates previous court decisions on the issue. So we're going to have a couple things going on here when this goes through the oral arguments. Not only are we going to look at abortion, but we're also going to be looking at what the Supreme Court, how they feel about precedent. How much weight does precedent carry? And what is precedent? Precedent is when a particular law has come before the Supreme Court on numerous occasions and different types of decisions have been made about that law, And Supreme Court justices many times will say, well, because this Supreme Court said this is the way the law should be, we don't want to overturn that precedent. My question is, just like some of the different, you know, the big cases in the Supreme Court over the years where they did overturn, where is that line that the Supreme Court decides that when the court made their initial decision about a particular piece of legislation, being constitutional or unconstitutional, you know, where is that line? And where is the line that you say you were wrong? You know, like Dred Scott, you were wrong in what you said there about a black man. So what do you hold, go with precedent, or do you say you were wrong and you overturn it? Just like the apple cart, you know, you overturn it. That's what that's one of the big things that's going to happen with this particular decision that's going on. The nine justices are going to be present and have the chance to ask both sides about their reasoning. For Mississippi, the state solicitor general, Scott Stewart, will be arguing in favor of the law. On the other side will be attorney Julie Reichelman and U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preloger. Those are the main players. So here's what's at stake. Mississippi is asking the court to overturn longstanding abortion precedent in Roe v. Wade. They're saying there was no constitutional basis. And I have to tell you, I tend to fall on the side of this argument, that there was no constitutional basis for the whole thing about Roe v. Wade. There is no inherent right to privacy in the Constitution. Planned Parenthood versus Casey, two landmark cases that prevented state governments from banning abortions at certain points during pregnancy. They'll be looking at both of those. In doing so, it could radically alter the landscape of abortion across as many red states are prepared right now to quickly pass laws permitting further restricting access. The making abortion illegal in Arkansas has been passed. You know, I mean, if they do this, you know, it's got a trigger on it. If the Supreme Court says that Roe v. Wade no longer, you know, is there, it crumbles, then it goes back to the states for states to decide, you know, how they want to do abortion in their state. See, that's the biggest misnomer for a lot of people. They believe that when Roe v. Wade was passed, abortion was illegal across the United States. That is false. There were many states that you could get a legal abortion in when Roe v. Wade passed. What Roe v. Wade did is that the Supreme Court, with a wave of their hand, got rid of all states' rights precedents about how they dealt with abortion and said that a centralized government knew best. So we're going to see what happens. So that's what's sitting there for everybody that's going, that's watching this. Blue and purple states are expected to face renewed political opposition as they attempt to maintain less restrictive laws. Anti-abortion advocates see a victory in Dobbs as just the beginning, since it would return the issue to state-level battlefields. Whatever the outcome, it's unlikely that either side of the debate will stop fighting for the cause. Decisions in either direction, however, would be huge blows to movements that have worked for decades to enact their agenda into law. Here's how things have changed since Roe v. Wade in 73. We've seen inside the womb now. We know that the statement that was made by the pro-choice side, that it was just, you know, a glob of tissue, is erroneous and false. We understand the science better. We understand as a human being forms that from the very beginning, it has the necessary chromosomes to form into a human being. It's not going to be a rutabaga. You know, it's not going to be an elephant. It's a human being that's developing. And those great pictures that we've had, I mean, Life magazine was the first magazine that published those pictures from inside the womb of a little human being. And it changed the argument forever then. It really has changed the argument forever, and why it has changed to what is where we are today. So that will happen today at the Supreme Court. Here's what the main arguments are, and then we'll get our first break in. Roe v. Wade and Casey are vital precedent. Jackson Women's Health Organization has repeatedly underscored the longstanding precedents established by Roe and Casey. See, I don't care about that. They could be wrong when they made the decision on those two particular cases. The Supreme Court could have been wrong. Dred Scott is a perfect example of how a Supreme Court can get it wrong. Mississippi law, it argues, fails to pass Casey's requirement that state laws not impose an undue burden on access to abortions before viability. See, and that's another one. That's another argument that's an interesting one. Viability, that means can the baby, survive outside the womb? Well, you know, even when the baby's born, at the very beginning of its life, it can't survive, quote, outside the womb unless the mother or somebody takes care of it. So I really don't think that argument holds as much water as the pro-choice side tries to say that it does. Upholding the Mississippi law would be inconsistent with state thesis or the principle that courts let previous decisions stand. The very essence of those decisions is the right of every individual to decide whether to continue a pre-viability pregnancy to term, its brief reads. It also argues that there is no special justification for a different outcome now. Well, of course there is. We know a whole lot more now. We know a whole lot more now. We'll talk further about this in a moment. Ken Yang, chairman of the Saline County Republican Party, will be here in just a few moments. I'm Dave Ellswick. Stay with me. We got more to talk about here on the Dave Ellswick Show. Don't forget about PI Roofing. They're your specialists. They're your professionals. Take care of your roof. If you've got any kind of problem with your roof, for instance, you look up at your roof and it's shiny, not a good thing. It means all the granular material that are on the roof to keep the water from making its way through your roof and into your home are gone, and you need to look seriously at replacing at least that area. And if you got enough of those shiny areas, it means replacing the entire roof. Talk to PI Roofing. They'll do it for you. They'll work with your insurance company. They'll get things done for you, and it will be done professionally. They did mine. They've done a lot of my friends. They've done a lot of businesses. I can give you people to talk to, and they'll tell you that PI Roofing is the team to turn to when you need a new roof. Call them at 707-3551, 707-3551, or visit them online, piroofing.com. All right, we're about 24 minutes after 6 on a Wednesday morning. We are halfway through the week. That's a good thing. You know, this hump day today, this is middle of the weekday. We're closer to Friday than we were on Monday, which is, of course, a very good thing, something that we want to make sure we understand. Viability is going to be one of those things that you're going to hear about. I mean, we now know that an unborn baby looks like a baby long before, quote, viability standards come into play. We know from, because we can see babies in people's wombs. Viability is a flawed standard. The court's decision will likely center on whether viability is an appropriate benchmark for limiting abortions. And again, let me say, viability, I mean, just during the whole pregnancy, basically, then, and even after the pregnancy, after the child has been born. You know, if I take a newborn baby and just lay it on a table, it will die if you don't take care of it, if you don't give it comfort, if you don't give what some hospitals say is, quote, compassionate care. That baby will pass away. It must be fed. It must be taken care of. So I think that viability is a flawed standard to lay your main argument on. Mississippi is arguing that the court should instead rule that states can prohibit elective abortions if they have a, quote, rational basis for doing so. Rational basis is a relatively low standard for reviewing laws, but conservatives argue that the text of the Constitution provides no further protections for abortion. Roe and Casey, they say, essentially invented a non-existent right and cordoned off authority typically reserved for the states. Roe and Casey are unprincipled decisions that have damaged the democratic process, poisoned our national discourse, plagued the law, and in doing so, harmed this court, the state's attorneys have argued in their briefs and will argue and answer questions from and to the justices. So that's what you can expect today. This is a long overdue discussion that needed to come before the Supreme Court and to be dealt with. So I'll be keeping my eye on it, and we'll bring it up from day to day as these oral arguments go on. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out. Don't expect a decision like by Saturday. That's not going to happen. They got to write their, you know, this is why we feel this is the right decision. This is why we feel it's the wrong decision. And probably sometime around June of next year is when we'll get all of that to take a look at. So we'll find out by then. So that is the big story today of news that is facing us here as a country, as a society. And I think it's the story that you need to know about as we get today underway. You know, a lot of other things are going on, though, too. A lot of things being discussed out there. We've got, the president understanding a lot. Well, I don't know if he understands or not, but he's got a lot of different decisions that he's made, and it's caused gas prices to just soar into the stratosphere. I'm filling up. I don't know about you. I'll just let you know that at least today is Wednesday, so it was Monday. Monday I filled up. And it filled up over at Sam's in North Little Rock, and it was $2.82 over there. So I bought 20 cents cheaper than most of the places, for instance, in Cabot. And 20 cents is a lot when you add it up, with somewhere between 13 and 15 gallons into my tank. So, I'm looking at, saving quite a bit of money each time that I put gas in my automobile, and I'm not driving out of my way. I mean, I come down from Cabot. I'm on 67, 167 all the way down, and so you know, I pull off and stop at Sam's or and either fill up on the way here. Well, not really on the way here because they're not open yet. But I fill up on the way back home and get my everything filled up and ready to go for the next couple of days. A tank of gas to last me usually 2.5 days coming and going. CNN finally suspended Chris Cuomo. He really went overboard to help his brother. And you know what? I can understand. All right, back with you here on the Dave Elswick Show. Don't forget about East End Towing. I've been talking about them now for months. I hope that you have their number in your phone. It's 501-888-8849. This is a towing company that belongs to the Arkansas Tow and Recovery Board. They're licensed and insured, and all of their trucks are permitted, and they know what they're doing. They know what to do with your car if it's just your car that broke down. They can change a tire if you need to have a tire changed. If your keys are locked in your car, they can get into your car so you can get your keys. They can take care of your car and your boat and trailer if that's necessary, or if you got your camper in back of it. So keep that all in mind. And if you happen to be an 18-wheeler, they can take care of you as well. That's East End Towing. No matter the situation, East End Towing can handle it, and they've got all the answers for you. That's East End Towing, 501-888-8849, 501-888-8849. All right, let's continue on here on the Dave Elswick Show. Another big story. This is a statewide story, and that is Josh Duggar is going in court today. 12 main jurors and 4 alternates have been chosen for the trial as of yesterday. Duggar has pleaded not guilty to 2 counts of downloading and possessing child pornography. In 2015, reports said Duggar had allegedly molested several young girls when he was younger. He could face up to 20 years in prison if convicted. So, you're going to be hearing about this quite often here locally. It will be covered, nationally as well. He was in the show of 19 Kids and Counting. And after years of appearing in the reality show, Duggar made headlines back in 2015, as I just said, when news broke that he reportedly molested a number of young girls, including his sisters. Now he'll face a judge on charges brought against him in April after allegedly possessing images of young children. Ahead of the trial in Fayetteville, Arkansas, there's a lot of other things you need to know, as far as the charges and all the rest. Jury selection has been taken care of. As I said, that's been done. So the jury has been selected and is ready to go. Fox News reporting on their website today about some different things that are going on, and that he faces kind of an uphill struggle of what he's got to do to be able to keep himself out of jail. So that's a story I'll touch on as we see what's going on with it, as new information, what's happening. So AOC has been invited by the Virginia GOP House hopeful to campaign for Democrat incumbent Spanberger. Who would want her to come? I don't care if you're Democrat or not. I think that I would find somebody else to come and do campaigning for me. I'd find somebody else to do it. Here's one that's kind of interesting. Dr. Oz. Everybody knows Dr. Oz. You've seen him on television. Oprah Winfrey introduced him years ago, and he became an overnight sensation. he has decided to run for the Senate seat of retiring Pennsylvania Republican Pat Toomey. So he's trying to become a senator. Now, it is a full field. I think with Oz, there's 11 candidates in the primary for that. He is a cardiothoracic surgeon, and he's a television host, of course. He spoke about his recently declared candidacy for United States Senate in Pennsylvania during an interview last night on Fox News on the Sean Hannity Show. Oz, who went to a grade school in President Biden's hometown of Wilmington, Delaware, and who has lived for many years in New Jersey before moving back to Pennsylvania, announced earlier Tuesday he will seek to replace retiring Republican Senator Pat Toomey. Oz told Hannity that as the son of Turkish immigrants, who was afforded unparalleled opportunities by the United States to become the successful doctor and television personality that he is, it is time now to repay my debt. America is in crisis. That's not news. Our values are under attack. So I want to serve America in its time of need, said Oz, adding that Pennsylvanians deserve better solutions to crises from their elected leaders than they are currently afforded. Oz spoke about his medical expertise and how he recognized that the new long surpassed 2 weeks to stop the spread socioeconomic restriction period placed on Pennsylvanians and many other Americans turned out to be much more complicated and worse for people. I spent a lot of time trying to understand what went wrong, and it's emblematic of other issues we are struggling with in our great country. Remember the phrase, 2 weeks to flatten the curve? That metastasized into this terrible authoritarianism and overreaching that did not make us safer. People with big yards told people with no yards to stay indoors because that's where the virus was. Some closed the parks, shamed people about beaches, and now threatening the same outreach with the Omicron variant. I think those choices should be yours, the American people's, he said. And he went on to praise President Trump's handling of vaccine development. I fought to empower my audience, my patients, and now the people of Pennsylvania. He finished up by saying, every choice I make will be serving the citizens of Pennsylvania and the United States, and none of them will serve the special interests in Washington, many of which I have been at war with my entire career. I have taken on Big Pharma and have scars to prove it. And in the past, I've also voiced support for law enforcement amid the defund movement. So he is in it. He's got enough money. He's worth over $100 million. He's got enough money that he can self-finance his campaign. So he can he does not have to take money from people for his campaign to be successful. Now, he's decided to run. Matthew McConaughey, who was thinking about running for the governor of Texas, made the decision over the weekend not to do that in Texas. He decided that he really didn't have enough that he stood for to run for that position at this time. All right, let me tell you about if you're looking for something sparkly for Christmas, that you should go over to see a friend of mine, Eric, who is the owner of Hillcrest Designer Jewelry. He's at 3000 Cavanaugh Boulevard, Suite E. He opens at 10 o'clock today. He opens at 10 o'clock every day but Sunday. Sunday he's closed. Go see him. He's got plenty of jewelry in his display cases for you to find something that your special somebody would really, really like. And let's face it, guys, yeah, you know, it's not bad. Sometimes once in a while we'll take a necklace or take, you know, if it's, you know, get kind of a, you know, a masculine feel to it or a ring, in fact. But jewelry, basically, we look at it for women. And ladies like to have sparkly things, at least the ladies that I have dated in my past and that I married. and they liked jewelry. Bottom line is that if you need jewelry, Hillcrest Designer Jewelry is the place to go. He's got just beautiful pieces, from stud earrings up to pieces that are, you know, thousands upon thousands of dollars, with, you know, emeralds and rubies and diamonds and dripping off of them. They're beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I can look at them and really respect the beauty. I just can't write a bad check. I mean, I'm just, I respect Eric enough that I won't write a bad check to him. You can call him at 501-246-3655 and talk to him. Ask him if he's got certain things. If you're looking maybe for a wedding band set, you should talk to him, because he can get you probably the best prices on diamonds anywhere in Central Arkansas. That's Hillcrest Designer Jewelry. They're 3000 Cavanaugh Boulevard, Suite E, right here in Little Rock. You know, Greg Gutfield cracks me up a lot of times with what he has to say, what he writes. And he's got an article today talking about Chris Cuomo and how he tried to help his brother. And he says, and who wouldn't try to help their brother if they were in trouble? Problem is, he's been lying about it, obfuscating it, smoke and mirrors it, but he does work at CNN, and that's kind of their modus operandi anyway about real news. So Gutfield said he was sorry to hear that. This is, you got to understand, a lot of it is tongue-in-cheek from Gutfield. And he was sorry to see that he had been put on leave indefinitely. He said he didn't think any talk show host should be able to be fired from CNN or be, you know, suspended as long as they had Joy Reid on. I got to agree with him. I understand what he's saying. How can you go out after anybody for misleading people and lying and not telling the truth? If you let that lady stay on the air, she is absolutely the worst. I mean, seriously, the worst. And they leave Jeffrey Toobin on. We know all about Jeffrey Toobin. I mean, this guy's supposed to be one of the smartest men about the Constitution in the world, in history, I guess. And, you know, he doesn't know how to keep his fly up when he's on a Zoom call and playing with himself. So, you know, he's back on the air. The people who really got to consider about CNN are the people who watch it. If you're watching CNN for the truth, you're definitely in the wrong place. I'm just telling you. You are in the wrong place. They have lost 80% of their viewership over this year. 8 out of every 10 viewers who used to watch CNN are not watching it any longer. And it's understandable. I mean, you only have to tune in on any of their shows and hear the hysterics that they do and the crazy things that they say to know that this is not a network you go to for the truth. And don't get me wrong. I mean, there are times that I believe Fox gets it wrong. And that they run static for the Republicans. I would like just to have a news channel that does nothing but the news, to be honest with you. I watched that interview. I forget what the gentleman's name was. He used to work at CNN. He said what CNN should do if they want to survive is go back to what they were at the very beginning and just become a news operation only and get rid of all of the other people that they have surrounded themselves, you know, Don Lemon and all the rest of them, and put them out to pasture. Because I think that's what America wants. I mean, One American News, it's good. Newsmax, kind of. They play their side as well. One American News is probably the closest right now on cable that is basically doing just news. I think they could do it more entertainingly. I mean, look, you go back and, you know, Huntley and Brinkley and some of the other news, Fahey Flynn and some of the others that were on television years ago. And they did the news straight on, but it was entertaining at least. Now it's, you know, you can read the news and make it as entertaining as watching paint dry, or you can do the news and as you do it, you'll have the visuals and things that you need so that it's entertaining as well. And maybe that will happen as they continue to find their audience and get more people watching them and get more people advertising with them. Because if, to be honest with you, in radio and in television, news is the most expensive part of the format to do. It takes a lot of people if you do it right. It takes a lot of, you know, you got to have graphics people. You got, for, you know, if you're looking TV, graphics, you're looking for good camera people. You need editors. You need producers. You need writers. You need talent. You need all those things. And it doesn't come cheap. And you got to have quite a bit of money. And that's where local television stations make most of their money and that they can sell commercials in. They sell commercials for network programming, you know, and sports and things of that nature. But their news operations is where they try to generate most of their money. It's the same thing in radio. Back in the day when radio did news, you'd be hard-pressed now to find very many radio stations that has a news department. That was one of the first things that the corporate bigwigs started cutting when they started buying up all the radio stations across the United States. And then what they did is they put a news hub, what they would call a news hub in, and it would service, you know, a bunch of radio stations and a bunch of communities. And of course at that point you lost a lot of your local news that you wanted. I mean, when we got a great news product through Salem Radio Network. They do a good job. But they're basically talking about national news. They're not talking about Little Rock, or they're not talking about Fayetteville or Cabot or Conway or any of the others. They're carrying national news. And they, of course, Salem has their talk show hosts that they put on, and they're talking national topics. I'm the only guy that's doing local stuff, you know, when it comes up, like bringing up Duggar and talking about that, or talking about the governor now says December 7th will be the day that the legislature comes together to start putting together some tax proposals. And I guess he's got enough buy-in from state reps and state senators that they won't bring up other things to do. If you get 2/3 vote, you can look at some other issues and bring them up to be discussed and maybe voted on. One thing I know that Senator Rapert's trying to do is a law dealing with abortion that would be like Texas's law. Of course, the governor is against it. He said, you don't need to do that. We got this argument, as we talked about in the first half hour of the show, going on before the Supreme Court, and we don't need to pass more legislation, which might not be necessary if the Supreme Court throws all this stuff back into the laps of the state legislatures about abortion. So, you know, Governor Hutchinson many times doesn't want to take on what I think are divisive issues. And that's a divisive issue. There's no doubt about it. It's going to be a very divisive issue. Country's pretty well divided on it, on whether abortion should be legal or illegal. I want to see it be decided by the states, because I think it's a states' rights issue. And so hopefully that's what they're going to say in the Supreme Court as well. And we'll go back to the way it was before Roe v. Wade, because abortion was not illegal all across the United States. Again, that's a misnomer. That's not the way it was. You could go to New York during Roe v. Wade when it was before, pre-Roe v. Wade, and get an abortion. Same thing, you go to Vegas and get an abortion. Couldn't get one probably in Little Rock. There's different rules in different states, and that's the way it should be. All right, let's get our break in, and then we'll come back, and we'll have more for you here on the Dave Elswick Show. Next up is Congressman French Hill, right here on the Dave Elswick Show. Get back to it here on the Dave Elswick Show. This hour, as normal, a Wednesday, we will spend time talking to both of our congressional representatives in Washington, D.C. Congressman French Hill will join us first, and then we'll be joined by Congressman Bruce Westerman, Congressman Hill from District 2, Congressman Westerman, District 4. And Congressman Hill, thanks for joining us here on the Dave Elswick Show. Hope that your Thanksgiving was a good one. Hope you're planning for a fantastic Christmas.
Dave, I am. It's good to be with you, and I hope your delicious Thanksgiving you told us about last week has come to pass, and it was fantastic.
It was good, and I didn't save you any leftovers. I'm sorry. But
I know. I like these aggressive non-turkey eaters, and so I like – and the turkeys love it. I mean, there are hundreds of turkeys around the country. Thank you for your desire not to eat a turkey.
Am I wrong, or did – did Biden not pardon the turkey this year?
He did, but even I think the turkey was embarrassed. He didn't even want to be pardoned by Biden. He would have rather been killed.
That's good. He didn't even want to appear on camera with him. All right. That's good. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the economy. I mean, we got to talk about inflation, the supply chain. It is a mess, the economy. Is this man in what, 8 months? Has literally is starting to destroy our economy, and everybody says, "Yeah, but look at all the jobs. Look at all, yeah, let's look at all of that stuff." And you got a pay raise, and it's all gone because of inflation.
Yeah, that was the beauty of the excellent work done by President Trump to lower tax burdens. 9 out of 10 Arkansas families got to take the standard deduction. They got a tax cut. They had 5% real wage growth, real meaning after inflation, during the last 2 years of President Trump, all taken away, obviously, by the pandemic. And so the Biden administration is going the opposite direction of opening the country. They're making us more dependent on energy in Venezuela and Saudi Arabia. They are making it harder to go to work, more expensive to go to work. And by this fiscal stimulus combined with the out-of-control monetary policy, we're seeing inflation. And we've been warning. When I say we, I mean a bunch of us. You, me, conservatives, conservative economists, Democrat economists have been warning about this for over a year as we came out of the pandemic. Don't overstimulate the economy with more social spending madness that's not paid for, that's increasing the deficit. But they're doing it. And so we are paying the price for that. The supply chain issue that we all read about and talk about has just made it worse. But the real contribution to why we have inflationary expectations over 5%, and while we're experiencing inflation now at 6%, is due to, in my opinion, the immense overstimulation of fiscal spending in the Biden administration and combined with the Federal Reserve buying the Treasury debt aggressively.
Yeah, well, what's really concerning to me is you look at the supply chain, and you would think they would have made a little bit of a dent in it. And that's not the case. It gets worse. I mean, you look at the ships that are off the coast of California and other areas in the United States, and they're not going down. They're going up.
Yeah. And you've actually seen companies like our own Walmart in Arkansas, and Amazon had a big story about this week. They've chartered their own vessels. They're chartering their own planes to go pick things up that are coming into the U.S. They can't be reliant on that loading and unloading at San Diego. And they're using small ports, like up in the state of Washington, or even some Gulf Coast ports to get things into the U.S. to go around the logjam. What is that logjam? Unionized labor at San Diego, the longshoremen's are demanding more money and are threatening to strike, not showing up for work, plus the government mandate on masks and vaccinations, and I would say a shortage of people in the logistics industry, particularly truck drivers. All that has been exacerbated by the regulatory policies and the mandate policies of the Biden administration.
You know, I don't think people realize there's no short fix to this. It's going to take quite some time. Heard a story this morning as I was driving into work saying that inflation, which they said would be short-lived, is not the case. It's going to be around at least to the middle of next year, and I bet you it's here when we go to the polls in November.
Yeah, let me tell you why I think that's the case. Dave Rubenstein's a big Democrat. He's a former Carlyle Group executive. He's was on Bloomberg last week, and Dave Rubenstein's a very smart business guy, by the way. He says he doesn't see wage price and pressure like we had in the 70s, because the economy in the 70s was about 25% unionized, and we're now at 10, 11%. Unionized, and I think he's missed the whole boat, because labor in this particular economy does have market power, and the onshoring efforts, the pandemic, the supply chain issue, all this has been inflationary. All this is creating a workers' market, so it's a fantastic opportunity if you have skills and you want to go to the marketplace. You're going to bid those up, and so every person I talk to in white-collar service industries and in manufacturing, blue-collar industries, are paying up way increases. And on top of that, we've got 25 states plus that have increased their minimum wages, and unions, many people price off that minimum wage. So I believe we do have labor inflation. I do expect it to go into 2022 and 2023. And I think that leads to higher inflationary expectations when you have the stimulus. Trillions of dollars, unpaid for dollars, 1.9 back in February, Biden's unnecessary additional COVID spending. Then we had the infrastructure bill. Now we're proposing to spend nearly $4 trillion on the social spending bill, and this is all on top of the $5 trillion we spent in 2020 to fight the pandemic. So this is why there's so much money in the economy, and Milton Friedman taught us. When you have too much money chasing too few goods, you get high prices. And so I do think if we're in for two or three tough years here on inflation.
Yeah, it's not. It's
I hope
not.
I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I always say that. I always want to be very candid with your listeners. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But that's not what I'm seeing right now.
Now, you, Congressman, know that you cannot fall. You cannot fly in the face of economic reality and expect anything less than what you're going to get when you go out and keep pouring money into the economy the way the federal government has been doing.
Right.
It's going to do what happens. All right, hold on. We come back. We'll talk about Omicron, this new variant that's out there. It's got everybody freaking out. I want to remind my listeners that Dr. Terry Yamauchi will join me for an hour tomorrow here on the Dave Elswick Show. We're going to talk about that. I hope he'll be able to put you at ease a little bit about this variant. We're going to have to learn how to live with COVID. Because it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And we've got all kinds of pharmaceuticals. We've got more than just vaccinations to fight it. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow. But we'll come back, talk to the congressman about it. We'll talk to the congressman about all the money they're talking about spending on it here on the Dave Elswick Show. Let's do that. 7:15, a quick break, and then we got more for you here on the Dave Elswick Show. We've got Pat Davis wanting you to know that you need to take a look at getting your health insurance. It's that time of the year again. He can save you 30 to 50% on it. He can get you health insurance, no copays. This is health insurance that is any of the insurance that you can buy from any provider in the nation. It is actual insurance. It's not a share plan. So you need to talk to him about this. And this plan that he has is really, really good if you are self-employed. That's Pat Davis, your health plan man, yourhealthplanman.com, or 501-605-6935. All right, back with you. Our guest is, of course, Congressman French Hill. I wanted to talk to you about this new variant. The president has, put a travel ban on South Africa. He said that he's not going to shut the economy down again, but of course he did tell us there would never be a vaccine mandate either, and we know how that went. So what's your feeling about what you're hearing up on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think there's concern, obviously, and doing the travel ban, as President Trump did early against China, wasn't a good decision by Joe Biden just to simply slow the situation and let nations study it. There are cases in Europe and in Canada, and people are looking at it and looking at the impact. So I don't think we should overreact. We've just lived through the the Delta variant. It speaks for the issue that if your doctor thinks you ought to be vaccinated, that's a good defense. So we need to let's see what happens. The vaccine manufacturers that were as a result of President Trump's Operation Warp Speed say that they believe the vaccines are effective and that they can also tweak them if they need to based on what they're seeing either in South Africa or more likely the cases in Europe.
Now, you got that, and we've got a lot of other things just besides getting jabbed in the shoulder. I mean, there are pills now that are out there that they're hoping will be on the market here very shortly that, according, I think it's Merck that's behind it. They say it reduces the chance of death from COVID by almost 95%.
Yeah, I'm hoping, Dave, today, actually, and if not today, this week, to get a good briefing on the new pill that was approved by the FDA yesterday, narrowly, both Merck and a company, partnership company called Ridgeback. And it's an antiviral, and you would start taking it the moment you had symptoms or a positive test. And I think you take it for 5 days, and they think it's very effective. If you have onset of the disease. So this is the kind of therapeutic. Remdesivir does that too for people, but it's an infusion, and so
right.
you've got to go to the right now. I don't think you should have to do this. I think you ought to be able to do it outpatient at a emergency clinic personally. But, you know, a lot of requirements to have people hospitalized to have that therapeutic treatment, which is also successful. That's what President Trump took when he was diagnosed and tested positively. So you're right. This is another piece out of Operation Warp Speed to have these therapeutics. But I do want to learn more about it, how it works. The vote of the advisory panel at the FDA was pretty narrow. I can't remember, maybe 13 to 10 or something like that to approve it for high-risk people. So it was a limited approval.
All right, let's talk. I do want to get to the border, but before we get to that, a story that broke yesterday dealing with who the president would like to take, you know, be the head dude of the of banking, and that's Cordae, and the Republicans are going absolutely ape over this. They do not want this guy coming anywhere near. And you're part of the banking committee there in the House. What's the feelings there?
Yeah, two things happened yesterday. Actually, early in the morning, or maybe it was day before yesterday, a news story came out that the president wanted to nominate a person who's essentially a Chinese communist sympathizer to be head of our Ex-Im Bank.
Yes.
So check that story out and let people read about it. And then yesterday, we had the news that Richard Cordray, former attorney general in Ohio, a protege of Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren. Richard was the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau for President Obama. He is a lawyer and a consumer advocate and a pretty aggressive regulator. So yesterday we hear that President Biden may nominate him to be the top Federal Reserve bank regulator. So this is not the chairman of the Fed, Jay Powell. This is the top person at the Fed for bank regulation. Richard's smart. Richard's aggressive. And he has been confirmed by the Senate before. He would not be my choice. But I don't think he's, you know, as crazy as the woman we talked about 2 weeks ago, Omarova, for the comptroller of the currency, who, by the way, I went to that hearing, stood in the back of the room 5 feet from her to watch this performance. And I'm so glad yesterday or day before, five Democratic senators said they couldn't support her. So her nomination is dead.
Good.
And we'll have to see what we can do about this Ex-Im Bank person that President Biden is thinking about. Richard Cordray, I think, is tougher, Dave. I would not, if I were in the Senate, I don't think he fits the job. I wouldn't vote to confirm him. But I think he's going to have supporters over there. We'll see what happens, see how his hearing goes. But he has been confirmed by the Senate before. He has been in a regulatory job before.
Well, he's a guy who believes in centralized government, though.
He is. He's a true believer. This is why I say I wouldn't support him. I'm just telling you, compared to Omarova, Moscow State, you know, Cordray has a record in D.C., but he is a big government guy. He's a central power guy. He believes that the government should have control over all consumers' lives and that banks are always bad actors, you know. So he's not my choice. But I'm always shooting straight with you that he's going to have supporters over in the Senate, I'm sure. And so we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
All right, so how are you feeling about Powell? I got to say, yesterday I thought he said some pretty interesting things. I heard a little conservatism in his voice.
Yeah, this is, look, the reason why you have a four-year term as chairman inside a major long-term term as a governor on the Board of Governors is to have some backbone and some sense of independence, you know, from the administration. And we need Jay Powell to do the right thing on inflation first and foremost. That is his principal job, price stability for the American consumer, to make sure that they're not suffering from inflation. That is his number one goal. His number one goal is not climate change. His number one goal is not diversity and inclusion at bank boardrooms. Those are not his number one goals. His job is monetary policy, which is to limit the ravages of inflation on working families in the U.S., and I hope he takes that seriously. And we'll be holding him accountable. He's on Capitol Hill today talking about the pandemic and news of the day, and I'm sure he'll get a lot of questions about his inflation outlook.
Well, and that whole inflation outlook, I mean, the only way you control inflation, as we found out during the Reagan administration, is to tighten up the money supply. And when you tighten up the money supply, you got to raise interest rates. The problem is, with federal government spending so much money and raising the national debt, you raise the interest rate, the payment on the national debt goes through the ceiling.
Yep. I'm look, if we were at a normalized rate, say 4.5% on the 10-year, and we're not even close. We're at 150 today. And even if rates went up, I don't think it would be much over 2.25. So we're half of where you and I have seen the average be for the past 20-plus years. But if it were at 4.5%, you know, we'd be spending more on interest than we spend on the national defense of the country because the debt's grown so much.
That's scary. Congressman, that's scary. That really takes a lot of weapons out of your arsenal to fight inflation.
It does. And also, if we do raise rates, the challenging thing, you remember Paul Volcker came in and said, we're going to end this, and he raised rates in the first 2 years of President Reagan's term. And we had a very short but very sharp recession right in the middle of President Reagan's first couple of years in office because of that. But what did we get? What was the benefit of that cost? First of all, President Reagan survived and was reelected and went on to lead one of the great two-term presidencies in history. But secondly, we killed inflation expectations that it would run rampant between 1984, say, and today. And so we brought interest rates down consistently from the early 1980s all the way to today. It's been a 40-year decline over that period of time in rates. And so that's why I'm concerned that we're in a tough spot here. The good news is, if we have to raise rates, it's still nothing like you and I faced. I paid over 10% for my first mortgage.
Listen, I remember Carter's years, man. I really do. I remember them, and they were a nightmare. They were a nightmare. And I heard someone say stagflation 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary in and of itself. All right, we're out of time. I'll hold off on the border until next week. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you later. All right, Congressman French Hill here on the Dave Ellswick Show. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts that have to be decided when you go to fight inflation. You fight inflation by making it more difficult to borrow money. You raise up interest rates. Problem is, we owe so much money in the national debt that if you raise interest rates, you're going to have to pay more on the national debt. As you just heard him, if we got back to where the interest rate should be and has been for like the last 20 years, we'd be paying more for interest on the debt than we'd be paying for national defense. A lot of things to consider. All right, it's Dave Ellswick's show. Let's get to Bill O'Reilly here on 101.1. So we just got done talking to Congressman French Hill, and we talked about inflation. So, you know, let's be honest here. A lot of us are concerned about out-of-control government spending because that leads to more inflation. We're, you know, really worried about these guys spending like drunken sailors. Political unrest. And, of course, the rapid decline of the U.S. dollar. All of that is enough to get your attention if you're trying to protect what you're saving for retirement. And if you're older than, I'd say, 45, you know, you got to keep one eye on what's going on in your IRA, your 401k, and your hard-earned savings. And so a lot of people turn into gold and silver, and you need to know what to do about gold and silver to make sure that you use it as a wise investment. Don't let 1970s-style inflation destroy your retirement. Learn how silver and gold can help you protect your assets, that, you know, IRA, 401k, hard-earned savings, by calling 501-222-3315. They work with one of the only regulated and licensed national wholesalers in the country, so you get direct prices from a dealer that you can trust. To learn more about buying silver and gold, call 501-222-3315. That's 501-222-3315. Investment advisory services are offered through David Lucas Financial and Arkansas Registered Investment Advisor. All right, keep that in mind. Talk to David. He'll help you out. He does a good job. I've known David now for nearly 15 years, and he knows what he's talking about. Phone calls coming in on the hotline. That tells me probably it's Congressman Westerman ready to spend some time discussing issues with us here on the Dave Elswick Show. And Congressman, thanks for joining us again here on this Wednesday. Hope that your Thanksgiving was a good one.
Oh, it was great, Dave. I ate a lot of turkey and watched football and spent time with family, did a little bit of hunting, so no complaints here. It was what everything Thanksgiving should be.
Yeah, well, let me throw out there, what about them hogs, huh?
Hey, I love that. I'm so excited about the program with Coach Pittman there and the job that he's doing, and the basketball team's doing well, so... I hear the baseball team may be better than it was last year.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah. By the way, isn't Pittman one of your constituents now?
Yeah, well, he has his, his retirement home over on Lake Hamilton in Hot Springs, which would be a constituent. You know, I've got to know Coach Pittman a little bit, and I've visited with him. And just what a great guy. I hope he coaches for a long time at Arkansas, but I'm sure we'll be glad to have him in Hot Springs when he eventually does retire, though. But I think he spends a lot of his free time when he has it down on Lake Hamilton.
I'm going to tell you what, looking at the merry-go-round of coaches going on right now, I'd extend his contract as quickly as possible.
Yeah, well, he says Arkansas is where he wants to be, and I think that's what's different about him. I think he truly, really wants to be at Arkansas. That's the last job he wants to have. I was, of course, football's a big topic up here, and I just saw my friend Garrett Graves, who lives in Baton Rouge and a huge Tigers fan, this morning, and I asked him if they had to raise property taxes in Louisiana to pay the new coach down there. But it's crazy these contracts are coming out for college coaches.
Yeah, it's amazing. And how important is a coach? Well, Lincoln, who left Oklahoma to go to USC, the number one recruit that was out there, according to ESPN, quarterback, dropped. He was going to be going to Oklahoma. Now he's going to USC.
Yeah, that's kind of what they expected when they gave him, $110 million contract.
Yeah, it's a nice contract. It's a good thing if you can get it, I'm just telling
you. The radio business, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I've got to watch these guys. They're getting into my area now. No. All right, well, let's talk. I just spent some time talking with Congressman Hill. We spoke a lot about the economy. I want to talk to you about the economy, too. The economy... Everybody talks, the left is saying, but look how good it is. Look at the jobs, we've lost. Unemployment is down and wages are up, but wages are down here recently. And if you did get a raise, inflation has already eaten them up. I thought we would see some movement as far as the supply chain went, and we'd see fewer ships sitting off the coast of all these different ports in the United States. And that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing more ships off the coast of these ports. We're going to be in really serious trouble pretty soon.
We're already in serious trouble, Dave. And, the crazy thing is the economy is red hot. But you got to ask, why is it so hot? And it's because so much government money has been poured into it, and people have all this money they're trying to spend. And we're seeing supply shortages. So... it's that's why they call it the law of supply and demand. If the supply is not out there and the demand's high, then price goes up, and we're seeing inflation. And I don't see anything that signals any kind of relief to that inflation, especially if this crazy Build Back Better, is it so-called bill, get signed into law, where you're dumping trillions of more dollars into an already overheated economy. So it's, you know, the way you typically control inflation is you raise interest rates and you tighten up the money supply.
Can't do that now.
You can't do that now. So you've lost that tool, and the Democrat solution is just to pour gasoline on the fire.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, Powell is in a corner. He can't do what Volcker did back in Reagan's days. You know, we were talking to the Congressman Hill. We had a little bit of a recession during the middle of Reagan's first 4 years because Volcker tightened up on interest rates because of what Carter had done. We don't have you're exactly right. We don't have that tool this time. So what do? You have any idea?
Well, I think we've got to focus on growing our economy here, grow it by producing things domestically, creating more high-tech, high-paying jobs here at home. And the way you do that is you let innovators and private companies go to work and do it. You don't create obstacles in the government by the inflation they're putting out, the administration that are putting more regulations, tax, and everything they're doing is going to cause investors to look to invest somewhere else other than in the United States. So what we need to do is to develop more of our resources, develop more of our energy, grow our economy and create jobs and get people weaned off of the government so that we're increasing people's income and not doing it through government funding with money that is really coming from people who aren't even born yet.
Yeah, well, we're at the point now that we're looking at our great-grandchildren to pick up the payback on the money that's being spent. It's incredible how much money they're talking about. I mean, they're going to have to literally apologize to drunken sailors with what they're doing on the Democrat side at this time.
Yeah, and I think I may have talked to you about this before, but I was looking back in history when the debt first went to $1 trillion, and Reagan used an illustration on that. He said $1 million, if you had $1,000 bills, $1 million would be a stack of $1,000 bills 4 inches high. $1 trillion would be a stack of $1,000 bills 62 miles high. It's just hard to even grasp how much money $1 trillion is. And we're not talking about a trillion. They're advertising it as 1.8 trillion, but it's, yes, the real number is 4 or 5 trillion.
Yeah, and in the end, over 10 years, they're talking 10 trillion. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, the way they scored it now, and it still has a bad score, they use all these budget gimmicks where they start a program and leave it in place for a couple of years and then let it expire. And their strategy is to get these programs in place and get people addicted to them. And then they'll come back to Congress at some later point and say, oh, we can't cut this program. Look at how it's going to devastate all these people. Yep. So they put all these budget gimmicks in place to try to make the score better. But it's horrible. There's no way to describe it other than horrible. And you're looking at the details inside there, and they removed the Hyde Amendment. So, you know, the Supreme Court's hearing what could be a landmark case today with the Mississippi case on abortion. And while that's happening in the Supreme Court, and I hope they correct the error that they made in Roe v. Wade, but the Democrats are saying we're going to take protections away and we're going to spend taxpayer dollars on abortion. That's in their Build Back Better bill.
Yep, I'm aware of it. And, you know, somewhere along the line, it's got to give, Congressman. It's just got to give. Let's come back, talk a little bit more. I'd like to talk to you about the Omicron variant that's out there and how people are running for the hills, and they don't need to, I don't believe. We'll talk about that because I think we're set to battle it much better than we were. And America now, Americans, for most part, they'll tell you we don't pay attention to international politics, but they are paying attention to it because we've got a new number one enemy in America, and it ain't Russia. We'll talk about it when we come back. We're talking with Congressman Westerman from District 4 here on the Dave Elswick Show. Don't forget about Dustin Turner. Right now, housing market, hot, hot, hot. All right, you want to sell your home? Now's the time to do it, probably, and to get the money that you're looking for, and maybe even more. And Dustin Turner can help you with that. What you need to do is to contact him and let him use his great marketing plan to get your house in front of a lot of people. He's got a trusted plan that has worked for hundreds of people now. It worked for the guy across the street from me. He sold his house just about 3 weeks ago. They just got done moving in yesterday, the people who bought it. And the house on my right side sold about 2 weeks before the one on the left side sold. And I'm still putting things together on the inside. Not a good time to move while it's the holidays. But we're still working on mine because we intend to sell it probably at the beginning of next year. To be able to do that, you need to use the Dustin Turner process. And he'll get your house in front of more eyes than anybody else on the internet. He knows that's where it happens at. He's got professional photographers, professional stagers. He's got the people that they need to use to be able to make your house look better than the other house that's out there on the market. Call him 501-952-2969. 501-952-2969 or go to HomeTeamSoldIt.com. All right, back with you. Of course, Congressman Bruce Westerman is our guest, District 4 here on the Dave Elswick Show. Your thoughts about this new variant of COVID that's raised its head, Congressman. Is the Biden administration doing what you think they should be doing?
It's hard to tell right now, Dave, and I've read differing articles about the new variant. The latest information I saw, they seem to think it wasn't going to be as big of an issue, that if you've been vaccinated, the vaccine looks like it's going to be pretty effective against the new variant. But I mean, it's hard to tell. I studied some biology, and it was more on the botany side of things in my educational career, but everything I thought I knew about viruses has been upended with this COVID virus, because you used to believe that if you were infected with it, that you were immune to it in the future. But now you can have it and get vaccinated twice and still get the virus again, but apparently it's not as devastating if you've been vaccinated. So it's something I think we've obviously got to monitor, and we've got to pay close attention to. But I think we're getting to the point where people are just going to say, we're going to go on with life, and if there's a virus out there, it's just going to be part of life, but we can't continue living like this, which in Arkansas, it is way different than it is here in D.C. or in different parts of the Northeast and in California. We really do have it a lot better off back home. When I got ready to go to the airport yesterday morning, I was walking out of the door and I thought, I forgot my stupid face mask. So I can't get on the airplane, so I was rummaging around in the house trying to find a face mask.
I can see that happening. I do it all the time. I go see the doctor, and just to get into the hospital or into the doctor's office, you got to have a mask on. Just the way it is. It's crazy. Yeah. Absolutely crazy. All right, so let's finish up by talking about an issue that I saw yesterday. I found very interesting. Russia has always been on everybody's mind as being our number one enemy. That has now changed. Yesterday, it was shown in polling numbers that 60% of Americans now, 60% now believe America's number one enemy is China. So they're paying attention.
Yeah, they're paying attention, but don't take your eye off of Russia either, and don't take your eye off of Iran. There are a lot of people in this world that don't have well wishes for us. I did a trip a couple of weeks ago. I went to Qatar and then went to Israel and ended up in Germany meeting with people. And I had a discussion with the German leaders about this Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And, you know, people think about that as, you know, Russia shipping dirty natural gas to Germany. And why does Germany not buy gas from other places? And it's really more, a lot more than an energy issue. The issue is that the gas that Germany's already getting from Russia is coming through a pipeline that goes through the Ukraine right now.
Right.
And Russia's not going to shut that pipeline down because they'll lose their German market. But if they do this Nord Stream 2, they bypass Ukraine. And what it's going to allow them to do is still sell gas to Germany, close the pipeline off in Ukraine. And, you know, they're trying to break Ukraine is what the Russians are doing. They're building up troops along the borders and along Crimea. And Putin is up to his shenanigans like he's always been, and as long as he thinks he can move and do something to his benefit, he's going to do that. But, you know, back to China, yeah, they're the big threat from an economic standpoint, and really I think from a military standpoint, although, you know, historically China has they've used more economic influence than they have military influence, but they're building up some tremendous military capability in these new hypersonic weapons that we should have here in the U.S., but Barack Obama canceled that program. So we've got some catching up to do on that. You know, China's stated goal is to be the dominant world economic power, and they don't care whether that takes 10 years or 200 years. They're just working towards that, and we seem to be trying to help them everywhere we turn. All this crazy stuff on electric vehicles and, you know, the Biden administration's efforts that are doing great damage to our energy security are playing right into the hand of China, where they make solar panels with elements and minerals that have been exploited from countries using slave labor, and they actually use slave labor to build a bunch of this stuff and ship it over here. And, you know, the real question about all these ships off the coast of California is why is there so much stuff being made in China that's coming over here? Why have we so heavily reliant on China? And I'm saying we have to make everything here in the United States, but we've got a lot of friends around the world, in Canada and Mexico and Australia and New Zealand and Taiwan, that we could be trading with, but we seem to just be moving more and more of our manufacturing and trade to China.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And for everybody who says, oh, Taiwan, what's the big deal about that? Well, I'll tell you what the big deal. Back in World War II, who would have thought, what's the big deal with Poland? You know, when the Nazis rolled through Poland with their blitzkrieg. I'm just telling you, there's a lot of similarities in what's going on now and what was going on in the late 30s, early 40s. Well, Congressman, it's been a pleasure. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say I've been to Taiwan before. I met with the female president there right after she got elected. And I'm sure I'm on a list in China now because I've visited Taiwan as an official U.S. Dignitary. But I've yet to go to China. And I probably won't go to China because I don't agree with what China's doing. And Taiwan is super critical. And China has their eye on Taiwan just like they did to Hong Kong and just like Putin's got his eye on the Ukraine.
All right. Thank you very much, Congressman. We will talk to you again next Wednesday. You have a great day. Keep up the great work. Congressman Bruce Westerman here on the Dave Elswick Show. Today in 1955, Rosa Parks is jailed for refusing to give up her seat on a public bus in Montgomery, Alabama. And so started the civil rights movement here in the United States with Martin Luther King. I'm Dave Elswick. See you tomorrow, 6 a.m.